I'm Elijah Manor. If you have not been to one of my previous talks, this is about jQuery, and I work for a company that supports jQuery, and was started by two members of the jQuery team, and so I live and breathe it every day. So if you weren't here before, I am Elijah Manor from Nashville, Tennessee. I'm at ASP.NET MVP and Insider, and I'm a senior architect at Pentoo. I'll have this up later for my contact information. So today I wanted to talk about six different things. Obviously that's in the title, but what I'm going to do is each point I'm going to start like with some basic knowledge about the topic, and then progress a little bit to like intermediate, and then hopefully some advanced things for each topic. And then once we proceed to the next topic, we'll go beginner, intermediate, advanced, beginner. So if you feel overwhelmed, just know the next point should have something you could understand. And if you're bored, hopefully I'll present something that challenges you. So let's start. So there is, JavaScript has something called this, and of course C# does as well, and most languages that you're familiar with. Unfortunately, this has different meanings depending on where you're at and what you're doing in jQuery. So I wanted to kind of overview to help maybe reveal some questions you might have. So here's a small code snippet. A very common thing that you'd see a lot of people do is use a selector to get anchors with the class of demo. If you don't know what a selector is, it's basically, if you think of it as a CSS selector, then it works pretty much the same way. And then we're going to bind a click event to that particular tag. And then we're going to have a callback function, which this is our event handler. So anytime they click on that particular element, it's going to come in here and perform some action. And so this keyword right here, anytime you have an event, jQuery makes this keyword refer to the element that you actually selected. So it's the raw DOM element. It's not the jQuery wrapped version. It's just the straight raw version. So just the standard anchor has an href attribute. And so if I clicked on one of these, it should give me whatever the anchor was for that particular, or the href for that particular anchor. Let's see, I don't, unfortunately didn't do that. So these are just simple anchor tags with a classic demo. I do prevent default. We'll talk about this more later, but I do that so it doesn't actually go to Google. Like I said, don't really do the default thing that you thought you were going to do. We'll get more into that later. We're talking about this right now. So the exception to that rule where this is the element in question is a jQuery plugin. So I don't know if you've written a jQuery plugin, but if you have, this is what it might look like. So to make a plugin, you start with the $, which is an alias to jQuery. It has an fn, which that's nothing special. It's actually an alias to the keyword prototype. So if you're familiar with a prototype in JavaScript, that's what fn is. They just made it shorter. And so whatever you put here is actually your plugin name. So that's really easy to do. And so then you assign it to a function. And this keyword inside that function is not the element that they selected. It's actually the result of the jQuery. It's actually a jQuery collection of objects. It's not the raw DOM element. So what? So to show that, let's see. So first, I'm going to do the dot length of this, and then I'm going to iterate over this because this is a collection of jQuery objects, and then I'll spit out their IDs. And in this case, when I'm inside the each, this will be the DOM element. So it's slightly confusing, but you'll see a lot of people. Oh, looks like I didn't do the default, prevent default. Do I want Dutch? No, thanks. Sorry, Dutch people. I can't read it. Looks like I just lost my talk. Sorry about that. So I'm not going to click here because I neglected in my click handler to prevent default, which goes there. So what you should have seen is when I called my plugin down here with the anchor of demo, when I call my plugin and get inside, it will actually be a collection of two elements because both of these are anchors with a class of demo. So the link should have been two, and then it would iterate over both of them, and each one would give me the ID, and I think this was, I could look at the source, but like Google, maybe, I don't know, Microsoft. Anyway, so that's the point. It's an exception, and what you'll see, if you look at people's jQuery plugins, you'll often see a lot of them wrapping this right here in jQuery, because you could put a dollar sign and put something in it, and so they're basically wrapping twice what they didn't really need. So they're doing more work than necessary. There's other things about this plugin, but this talk's not about plugins. The other exception is you could actually set what you want this to be, which is kind of powerful. So what you might want to do is, turn on color highlighting. What you might want to do is create an object called Twitter and use an object literal. And we're going to set some properties, a username and a tweet method, which says, hello, you know, Elijah. Wouldn't it be cool if we could bind that that object, tweet, to a click event? Now, so if we tried it here, so instead of making an anonymous function like we did before, wouldn't it be cool if we could pass a previous existing method to that click event? Well, unfortunately, that doesn't work. It says hello undefined. Because when it actually gets into this code and it sees this, this is referring to the element in question. And the element of this button doesn't have a tweet, or doesn't have a username. So it's like, what? So there is a proxy method in jQuery where you could actually tell it, I want to, anytime you see the word this inside the function that you're going to call, I want to tell you what it is. So there's actually two ways to do this. And one is inside the click event, you'd say $.proxy, and then you give it the method that you want to be called, and then you give it the context that you want that this keyword to be. There's another overloaded way. Well, I say overloaded, but jQuery doesn't. JavaScript isn't overloaded, but there's ways to simulate it. The other one is you pass in the actual object that has the method, and you give it a string name of the method to call. So anyway, two ways to do it, but we could basically override what this will be, so it will actually work correctly. So we'll see hello Elijah Manor in this technique, and the other technique is exactly the same. It works. So you might find, especially if you're building your code in more, you're architecting it well and making objects and doing things like that, this might be helpful. Because a lot of people get to the point where it's undefined and they're like, ah, stink, that doesn't work. Move on. So, okay, so point two, we're going to look at the jQuery object. There's some simple things that we kind of already briefly talked about, but about how to know if something's already been wrapped in jQuery. And if you have a jQuery object, how do I get at what's in it, like the raw DOM element? Because sometimes you need that. So sometimes, semantically, we could name things to help us know what it is. This is slightly controversial and kind of considered Hungarian notation, which you might have, if you ever did any Win32 development, you probably know that. But some people, well, anytime they wrap, so this would be the DOM element in question. And so normal people wrap it so they could do fancy things like fade out and animations, because you have to have a jQuery wrapped version to do these cool things. So some people will actually just put a dollar sign in front of their variable name to tell themselves, hey, from here on out in my code, I know that it's a jQuery object, so I don't keep wrapping it over and over and over and over again, because that's inefficient. But some people will argue to not do that. I go back and forth, actually. But and really, you all have to be in agreement on your team as well. But So just like the previous point, you could either prepend it or not, but the whole point is this is how you wrap a DOM element. You just shove it in jQuery and it figures it out. And so that way you could do fancy things like fade out. But once you have a jQuery collection, how do I get at the raw DOM elements? So if we work backwards, and let's say we got all the anchor tags on our page, we could call get just with an open print close parent, and that'll give us an array of the actual DOM elements that was shoved in the jQuery collection. If you wanted to get just the first item, you could do this above, which gives the array, and then just call the first index, or the zero would be the first item. Or the get actually takes a number as well, so that would probably be cleaner than this one. And it's such a common thing that they just made the jQuery wrapper allow you to use the bracket notation. So if you wanted to get the first item, any of these three will work. And obviously if you wanted the second item, you would do index of one. So depending on the library that you're working with, sometimes you need a DOM element, sometimes you need jQuery wrapped. Third point is knowing your selectors. Some people are so afraid of CSS3 because of cross-browser support that they don't either learn it or they're afraid to use it. Now, in jQuery, feel free to use all of it because it's not based on the CSS rendering or the engine. jQuery is actually doing it for you. Like, it makes sure it works, and there's like a slew of hundreds of unit tests to make sure it works. So feel free to learn these specialized ones. Like this, what's that? Looks like there's a bug flying down my screen. I got distracted. So simple ones, just like anchor, it's not a big idea. Ones that have any anchors inside of a div, rows that are odd, that have the odd class, sorry about that. The thing to note about CSS, you might not know, and the selector engine in jQuery, is it works from right to left. So what this is really doing is grabbing all the anchors on the page and then testing which ones have a parent of div. So as you write your selectors, you might keep that in mind, because you might think to try to be really specific at the front and go out, but you might be doing, it might be worse for you than doing the other. There is an exception. If you actually start with an ID, like a pound, and then go on, it will actually find the pound first, the ID, and then work from there. So we'll actually talk about that a little bit more later. So some more of the advanced CSS selectors that you can use in jQuery on all browsers is looking for special attributes, like an anchor that has hrefs that ends with mp3, or if you want all the anchors that had a target of blank, even though you're not really supposed to do that anymore, and then has classes that begin with the word custom. So you could do like some clever things that are uncommon, but that work. And then jQuery has its own set of unique pseudo selectors that it's internal just to jQuery. Like, you can't do this in CSS and it work. Like, there's a colon input, so you could give it, that just gives you all inputs on the page, or a colon disabled. And you could obviously, you could say, give me all of the divs that are disabled. So you say div colon disabled. Or all LIs that contain the text Abby. It'll look through and do all that fancy stuff. So these are things that are specific to jQuery that they added to the basic CSS3 spec. Of course, those never will be part of CSS3, but they work here, and they're good to know. jQuery actually takes a second parameter, which you may have never used. So the first one, you could shove a lot of stuff in the first one, actually. You could give it a function. If you do that, then it's like that's the onReady function. You could pass it a DOM element. It basically wraps it. You could pass it an object. It does some other fancy things. You could bind events. But if you pass two things, the second one is the context. It's basically like, where do I start? So, for example, here we're looking for all anchors that have a my class that have a parent of span. But don't start at the very top of the DOM. Like, I want you to start at this particular ID and then work down from there. So it could really help hone in your selections and speed it up if you're having problems. But you want to make sure this context, the second parameter, isn't very complicated. your best bet is to make sure it's an ID. Like if you start doing things like this, like I want you to start at this particular location, which has a parent, and it has to figure all that out. You basically just lost most of your performance by doing that. It's the preferred solution, and the one I like, I think it even reads better, is not even using the second version. It's just finding what you want, like the root, and calling find from there, and just trickle down that way. It's usually the cleanest to read because it's left to right. Because this one is like, oh, I want this, but oh, wait, no, I'm starting here, and it's just like flip-flop. Anyway, just a little tip. I tell you something that I tell you not to use it. That's awesome. Go, Elijah. Okay, there is custom selector filters that you could write. I don't know if you have, but you possibly could. And if you wanted to, kind of like the colon input or colon disabled, the ones I showed like that, you can make your own. So up here I'm making a colon element name starts with D. That's a really stupid thing to do, but I'm doing it. So all you have to do is jQuery.expression, that's what it stands for, pass in the colon, and then give the name of the thing that you want to be. And then you basically do something intelligent. It passes you the element, where you're at, some metadata about it, yada, yada. I'm not going to, the point's not about this code per se, but I'm doing some regular expressions to figure out if it starts with D or not. But you could do some really neat things with this. I'm not sure what your application you're doing. Especially if you have, like, if you wrote your own custom jQuery plugin, it might be nice to make one of these extensions that could find things that have been instantiated with your plugin. So anyway, if I click on, let's see, the code at the bottom is a div, oops, that's a typo, with a dictionary list with terms and definitions. So it should find div, DL, DT, etc. So if I run it, so it found the outer div, it found the DL, and DT, DAT, click, click, click. So not rocket science, but that might be useful in your application to help find things. The other thing about selectors is you don't want to keep using them over and over again. Once you found what you wanted, why don't you save that off so that you could call it later? Because in this particular case, this is a very simple selector. It's an ID, and those are extremely quick. But imagine this is a really complicated thing, and I'm just doing it over and over again. And I know it's really easy to copy and paste, but when it comes down to it, if it's complicated, it can really slow down your site. So one way to alleviate that is just to save it off in a variable, you know, hello, and then just call your methods from there. And that could conceivably save you a lot. Well, just imagine you have a loop as well. I mean, that could be very problematic. This is a very minor issue, but something that is better. Another way to solve the same problem is every time you use jQuery, it returns jQuery. It returns itself, so you can keep chaining the the API is kind of fluent in that way. So here's my selector. I call dot hide, and then I could call dot HTML, and then I could call dot fade in. And that's all because they keep returning itself, and so you could build up this nice expression. So, however, I've seen some really crazy chaining that they're trying to be really clever and never introduce a variable, and it's like, oh, I can't read that. So if you do that, try to format your code so it makes sense. There are some interesting tools to help you learn selectors better. I don't really use Firefox anymore, but there's an add-on called Firebug. Or no, there's obviously an extension called Firebug, but there's a FireQuery plugin for that, and it kind of walks you through suggested selectors for things you might want. There is... Let me click this one. Hopefully I don't screw up everything like I did last time. Here's a nice example. Like, here's some content over here. And here's example selectors. And you could, like, it will show you. Like, star means everything. You could say, give me ULs that are direct descendants of LIs. And these are siblings. as strong as a sibling together. And there's advanced ones. Anyway, it's just nice to kind of visualize to see what maybe you could do with this library. One that I find kind of fun, and I don't know if I'm trying to remember the shortcut. There you go. Oh, stink. There's a selector gadget bookmarklet. Why don't we just install it together? Okay. And then we'll go to here. So I'll click on it, and it loads, if everything goes according to plan. It loads this bar at the bottom. And then you could start clicking on stuff. So like, I want this ULLI. So then it shows, based on what I've clicked on, the things in yellow kind of match what you're talking about. And then what you could do is exclude things that you're like, well, I didn't really mean nested items. So I click that one. And then it says, oh, well, maybe you just meant the first one. And of course, it's artificial intelligence, so there's problems. But anyway, it used to show. Obviously, I haven't used this in a while. It used to be really cool. It showed you the selector. Did it lose it? Oh, no, it's right here. So here I thought it is LI, and then I clicked that one. Oh, I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Obviously, that was a bad example. But sometimes it's fun to play with to see. It's been useful in the past. Obviously not in this talk. So, yay. And Dave Ward, he's really big in the ASP.NET Nest world. He did a whole video about how to learn jQuery using either the web dev tools or Firebug, or just very interactive, like going to a website and just hacking around. It's kind of fun to learn that way. Okay. Going to events now. So there is a key concept called event delegation. And if you don't know about it, hopefully you'll learn it today, because it could really help your performance. So anytime you click on something in the browser, what happens is that event, like let's say I clicked on an anchor. I clicked on it. First it'll look to see if there's any event handlers attached to that. If it is, it'll run it. And then it'll actually go up the DOM, maybe to a surrounding div. It checks that. Is anyone listening for a click? Because I just clicked something. And then it just goes all the way up to the top, and then it actually comes back down, back to where it started. So jQuery listens to the bubbling process when it goes up. So you could actually do some clever things about that. So if I had a table, obviously I do have a table. So here's the table. I have one row. I have two TDs in it. So this outside piece is the table. Each of these is a TD. So I could click on the table, and it says you clicked the table. But I could actually click in the TD. I haven't attached a handler to the TD, but it will bubble up to the table, which I do have an event, and then I could, and it says it's TD, and it has a target. It says, who did you really click on? Like, I have a click handler on the table, but you weren't me. Who were you really? And so you could actually look at the event target node name and figure out where it came from. And you could actually get the node and do intelligent things with the TD if you want. So just think you have a table with lots and lots of information inside, and you want to attach events. It's very expensive to attach. Like if you had 100,000 elements, I know that's a lot, but let's just say 1,000 because it's more approachable. If you had 1,000 elements in a table and you wanted each one to do something, it would be very expensive to add an event handler to each of those. But if you just did one and let it bubble up and do something and figure out what to click and do something intelligent, that's a lot more performant. Because you pay the cost. When anytime you bind a click, you pay the cost up front, like it's attaching an event handler. I kind of showed this before, but there is every time you have a function, when you're binding an event handler, it passes the events, and one of those things is prevent default. And I kind of talked about this, and that was a bug in one of my previous slides. Shame on me. But what it does is it just says, don't do what you were going to do. So for most times when you click an anchor, you want to say prevent default because I think what did I click? Yeah, so if I clicked on that, it's like, so if I click off, it's not actually going to Twitter. But if I took this off, it would actually have gone to Twitter. So I'm telling it, hey, don't do what you think you're going to do. But what it does do is, do I have an example of that? Okay, I was trying to be clever there. That's why there were two alerts. You saw two alerts. One was the first one, the click handler for the anchor. And then it went up the chain because it was doing the event delegation, and it actually got caught by the unordered list. And so two things got caught. So if we look at the DOM, I had clicked on this one. Again, I have a typo, yay. So it clicked on this one. I have event handler on this one and this one. So what happened is it found this one. I said alert. I'm on an anchor. I prevented default so it didn't go to Twitter, but it still propagated up the chain. And since something was listening on the UL, it performed that action as well. So it still goes all the way to the top, listening as it goes. Now, if you want it to actually not go up, you could you might see people do return faults. So what that return faults really means for jQuery is it's preventing the default, so it's not actually going to Twitter, and it's stopping the propagation of going up the tree. And so I could have rewritten this. Instead of return faults, I could have said E dot prevent default and then have another line that says E dot stop propagation. Both of those are method calls. I could have done both of those, but return faults does both of those as well. So either way, so if I click on this one, it will alert click for anchor or click handle for anchor, but it will return false, so it won't actually go up anymore, and we should only see one alert. So click angular, and then it's done because I told it don't go up, stop. And this could be useful if you have a library that you did not write and they've done a lot of crazy stuff. And you want to stop what they're doing and just say, just do what I want, ignore the default behavior. Don't even let them process it. There's actually one even more strict method that you could call. There's a stop immediate propagation. So stop propagation prevents it from going up the tree. But stop immediate propagation says, don't go up the tree and don't let anyone else respond to this element as well. Like if anyone else is listening for this click event at this level, don't even let them like kill it. Like, and so it's this really hard one. I've used that not very frequently, but sometimes it's very useful, especially with third-party libraries. You're like, I don't even want you to look at this. Okay, so jQuery has a set of event helpers. So you'll see, up to this point, I've used click a lot. And it's just a helper. It's a small wrapper around the bind method. And it's just to help you not have to type maybe 7 characters. And so, but it's kind of nice. You could chain them as well. So any paragraph that has the class of click me, when they click on it, do this function. And then you can say dot, double click. So obviously that's when they double click. So you're binding multiple events to the same function. That gets slightly laborious and redundant if you're doing it this way. If you just use the bind, which is really a wrapper around it, you could actually just pass a space delimited string, which will do both of those. And so that way you could just pass it one function and it perform the same thing. That's a little tip for you. I tend to not use the click unless I'm just doing demo code or something. So if you want to, you could unbind event handlers. And there's 3 ways to do it. Some are slightly more dangerous than others. We'll start with a dangerous one. That's awesome. So this one looks at all paragraphs that have a click me class, and you can just say unbind. Now, the reason I say this is dangerous, because this unbinds any event, even if you didn't create it. Like, the framework could have added stuff. Other libraries could have added click event, hover event, any type of events to this particular paragraph. And so it's not really your responsibility to destroy all their code. So use that sparingly. A slightly less dangerous way is just to unbind everything to these particular events. So for this paragraph, any click and double click, just remove them all. And some of them you might not have added, so that's kind of dangerous too. The safest way is to take the function that you had added and tell it just to remove that particular one. And so you're kind of cleaning up after yourself in the most modest, I don't know if that's the appropriate word for what we're talking about, but just a little restraint. So bind has a problem. It's not necessarily a problem, but you see a lot in forums people have this problem. They will look at all the list items, which I think we just have one, static item, and they're going to bind a click event to that, and they want it to add a smiley face to the end of it. And so they're like, awesome, I could smile, yay. But then they're like, oh, well, this is an Ajax application. I'm getting data from the server, and I'm going to dynamically append stuff to this list. And then they click on the dynamic item, and they're like, where's my smileys? And they get sad. So there's an easy solution to this. It's not the best one, but it works. There is a live method. So you take the code you had before, and you just replace those four letters with live. And magically, I can be happy again. Now, the way that works, it's based on a concept that we already talked about, event delegation. So what live does, what bind does, it takes every element in the selector, takes your function, attaches it to every element, so that when it's clicked on, it can fire. What live does is it takes the event handler, it adds it to the document at the topmost level of your tree. It requires event delegation to happen. So not only it stores the function that you want to be called on the document, the very tippy top, but it stores the selector that you had intended for it to run against. So what happens is this is a very low cost of wiring this up, because you're not attaching it to 1,000 elements. You're attaching it to one, which is the document at the very top. The cost comes when you actually perform the event. So when I actually click on the 1,000th item down here, when I actually click on it, it has to propagate up to the very top of the document, which could be far, and then the document there's extra code jQuery has to do to say, okay, where'd you come from? And I have an array of selectors that you've registered. Does it match? And it has to do a little bit of logic. If those match, then it fires the event. And so things that didn't exist now do work, because really it never did anything to begin with. It just did a small registration. So a lot of people look at this and say, this is awesome. But the more complicated your app gets, you could have some performance problems with this. Fortunately, there's a better solution. So they took the same idea of live, and they said, well, why? If you remember when we talked about selectors, there was a second argument, like where to start. This is the same concept. So how this works is you select where you want to start, and then you say, I want, from the starting point of this UL, I want to look for all LIs and attach a click to them. So it's a little bit nicer. It's not actually attaching the event to the LIs. It's letting them propagate up to the UL. And the UL has that special logic that I talked about that was on the document. Like it matches the selectors, and that's where the event handler is. So this is a much better way to code. These days, most people tell you not to use live, because this is essentially live but better, because you have more control. And there's a controversy of live, to unbind live, it's die. And you're like, wait a second, is it live or live? Like, it should be, if it's the opposite of die, it should be live, but people call it live, and semantic problems, crazy. So undelegate is the reverse of delegate, which, you know, we all know how to say undelegate and delegate. So anyway, so this works as well. Smiley's here, smiley's there, and it's more performant because it doesn't have to go all the way up to the document. Okay, now that I've told you all these awesome methods, bind, live, delegate, jQuery 1.7's replacing all those. It's not deleting them or deprecating them, but now they just have an on and off. And depending on how you call it, it does one of the others. It either binds it, lives it, or delegates it. And really, if you look at the source code of 1.7, on our bind, live, and delegate are just one-liner pass-throughs to the on method. So it kind of makes sense, and I like the way it reads better because, okay, we have a customer, so a customer on click, so it's almost like in IE it's like on click, you know, it just reads like on click of a customer, do this function. If you start at the document, like I told you where live worked, then it behaves just like live does. So on the document, or document on click, look for customers, do this function. And it could also work like delegate. You give it a starting point, and you say on click. When you see a customer, do a function. So it's a little bit, there's really less things to, you don't have to worry so much about what the name is, versus, I think the intent is to get people to think about how they really work, instead of live solves your problems. So it's kind of nice to know how it really works. Anyway, this is not actually RTMD. It's release candidate 2. I would imagine it's going to go live soon. The next thing we're going to talk about is... storing data. So what people used to do, which is not cool, is take attributes that weren't really used very often, that should have been used, but weren't very used often, and shove data in them. Like, oh, no one really uses the alt tag. That's stupid. And so they just shove some cool stuff in there and retrieve it. And this works, but, you know, it's not really a great idea. It's not what it's intended for. So jQuery internally, the way it currently stores all these event handlers, like I mentioned, it binds them to all these DOM elements. It has like an internal data store that it maintains. And so if you were to grab a jQuery object, it has a data method on it. And if you actually, you could shove key value pairs in there. So if I looked at the list item demo and said data, I could pass a key of special info and store some data in there. And the data could be a string or an object. It could be full-fledged JavaScript object. The interesting thing about it is in the current version, they might change this, but if you look at the key called events, E-V-E-N-T-S, you'll actually get an array back of all the events that were registered for that DOM element. And you can actually look at them and like, oh, they have an onClick for this one. That's interesting. So that could be useful for debugging application if you're like, where is this code? Where, click, you know, who's handling this click? So anyway, to retrieve this data, you just give it the key. If you don't have a second parameter, it's like a getter. So this is a setter and this is a getter. And like I mentioned, this is a simple data type, string to string. But you, like I said before, you could pass in an object literal or an object just like you would before, and you could retrieve it just the same way. And just to prove that it is the same object I called first name, and that worked fine. If you just want to not worry about all the keys and you just want to shove, like, I just want you to shove all this data at once and basically blow over anything else, you could just pass one parameter to data and just shove it all in there and then get it out. That's kind of dangerous because you're kind of possibly blowing over what people have stored in there before, but maybe you intended to do that. Yeah, that's essentially what I'm talking about there. Yeah, no big deal. There's a remove data as well. So if you pass the key, it deletes it. Okay, so which brings us to HTML5 data attributes. Now, as of jQuery 1.4.3, if you call dot data on an element that has one of these data roles on it, it actually gives you the HTML5 value from the attribute. So even though you didn't shove it manually through the API, it will say, well, you probably wanted that, and I'm going to give it to you. As of jQuery 1.6, they actually made a slight change to kind of conform to the W3C standard. So if you had a dash in here, like data last dash name, then to retrieve it, you have to camel case it. So you basically remove the dash and make the V capitalized. So I've seen this trip up people, because it's like, I wouldn't have known that, you know, unless I learned it. And so hopefully now you know and can tell your friends. Also, what it does for you is it tries to be smart. And so it sees a 43, and it will return you the number 43 instead of a string. So it tries to coerce them for you. And it sees a true, and so it actually gives you the Boolean true. If you really want the string version, like you don't want it to convert the number, like you really want it to be string 43, you could always use the ATTR method, which is the attribute method, which historically has been the way that you would get these things. Anyway, that's all information for you. The last point is talking about AJAX. If you're already using jQuery, the first two or three points you probably already know, and maybe not the last two. But again, we're going from simple to semi-complex. So jQuery has a lot of helper methods, and you might be using these only, maybe. So they have a get, where it basically does an HTTP get to this URL. You could pass it some data in this optional second parameter, but if you don't, it doesn't send data. And then it retrieves the response to this function. There's a get JSON, I forgot a period, that's wonderful. It goes to the same location, but the data coming back, it tries to make sure that it deserializes that into a JavaScript object, because you're telling it should be JSON. There's a get script, this is an interesting one. If there's a script that you might need, you're not sure yet, maybe based on some functionality, maybe you have a single page app that has a lot of stuff and you don't want to load things till later, you could give it the URL of a local script, and then not only will it get it, but it'll execute the script immediately so that it will be accessible to your page. This is a commonly not well-known, that's an awful way to put that, API called load. So for this particular div, let's say I have a div of ID of output, I'm going to say load this URL, whatever content is here, shove in here, but I want you, for this content that came back, I want you to use a jQuery selector and only give me the contents of the table and shove the table contents in there. So it's actually getting the whole web page and then only grabbing the contents of the table and then shoving that in here. So you imagine maybe there's some web page that you need to scrape, but you only need a small portion of it. So the key is having a space here, which is not really obvious, but and then having whatever selector would be after this. I don't use it very often, but when I do, people are like, oh, that's nice. The last one is a post. So you grab a form, and there's a serialized method, which basically takes that data and shoves it in a serialized format that a post would understand, you know, with all those crazy characters. And then you give it the URL to post to, and the data that you serialize, and then it will return success or failure. Now, if you notice, none of these have a parameter at the end, like if a failure were to occur. So this is like, oh, everything is going to work all the time, and I don't care if something breaks. That's essentially what you're saying. So there's a way to get, like if you really love the wrapper, the helpers, there's a way to get at those items. So there's some global AJAX events. There's AJAX start, send, success, error, complete, and AJAX stop. So you could add any of these events to any element. It could be the document, it could be a div. And what's going to happen is anytime there's any error on any AJAX call ever, it's going to fire this code, and you could do something intelligent with it. You could either put it in this div. It doesn't have to be related to this selector, which I think is kind of weird, but you could put it in there, or you could put it somewhere else. So something that you might want to do, and I've done in the past, is like when you when an Ajax has started, maybe start some swirly, like make it modal, like you can't interact with the page, and then have a swirly. And then when it completes, you know, remove that. That's something you might do. Or if there's an error, do a pick some toast or something. Like not that you eat, but things that pop up with a notification, like, hey, there's a problem. You might want to think about it. So I don't really use these unless I'm just throwing stuff together. I tend to use, actually, this is false. I don't actually use it directly anymore. That's another talk. But there, all those wrappers are just calling $ to Ajax behind the scenes. So the wrappers are just doing fancy stuff, like the post example I showed before. It's just calling Ajax and saying, the type is post, by the way, and the data is the data I just passed in. Oh, and there's the success. If you want to, but the cool thing about the $Ajax is you could add so many more parameters to it. You could tell it when you should cache. You could tell it, you could have a data filter, so you could actually manipulate the data. You could actually listen to the error. So you don't have to do those global events. You could actually pass in an error here. You could have a, there's a bunch of stuff, even more than I list here. So as of jQuery 1.5, there's something new called deferred. And a problem that we had here is when we do $Ajax or the helpers, we're defining a lot of information at one time. We're defining what type it is, what URL it is, what data is going in, what we're limiting ourselves to one success callback, and we have to define it immediately. There's no way to add it later. So with a deferred, it's kind of like a promise. Like it's like, hey, I'm going to create this Ajax thingy that's going to get pets. And you save that off as a variable. And, well, that is chainable as well. And then you say, okay, based on this Ajax thing, I want to add a done callback, and then I'm going to add a fail callback, and then I'm going to add a always callback. So always will always happen either as a successful or a failure. And then since we stored that off, later in our code, we could say, oh, there's something else I want to do all the time if it's successful. So you could just keep adding on, just building up this deferred object. And so, which is kind of cool. And the other cool thing about it is there's a new feature called when. Now, deferreds aren't specific to Ajax. I'm just mentioning because you can do it. But let's assume there's multiple resources on the web that you need before you could even start to think about doing something else. Right now, it's kind of difficult to do that. Like, you gotta, yeah, I don't even want to think about manually doing that. But with the when, you just give it a list of Ajax calls or anything that uses the deferred, and it will wait until all of those have completed, until it does the then. And then the then has a successor or a failure. So the success will only fire if both Ajax calls have completed. The failure will call if these got done and one of them was a failure. And so just think how that might... I don't know if you run into a situation where you need that, but I have, and this is very helpful. You could actually, you can make your own deferreds that are based on nothing of Ajax. You could just say, I want a deferred that means a certain animation has completed. Like multiple animations need to complete, and then I want to do something else. And so you could wire all those up and then have a then, you know, whatever. Anyway, that's it for the talk. Thanks for staying for extra long. Here's my contact information, and if you have any questions, you come up and I'll have business cards or whatever. Thank you.